This is the Canucks Central Postgame Show.
But here's a breakaway chance the other way for Pod Colson. In on goal. Stopped by Rinne Greenbaum. They score. Elias Pettersson followed up. He's got another one. His third in the last two games. Sports as they get a shot left wing. He scores. Brock Besser in front. JT Miller threw it to the net. And Besser tips it home past Dave Rinnick. Canucks strike on the man advantage to take a 2-1 lead.
With the instant reaction from the players and coaches.
Mott left point, taking a pass from Lamico, tips it into the corner, carries behind the net, tried to center, top of the crease, and it's in the net. Juho Lamico knocked it home in the blue paint. As Mott centered from behind the goal, Lamico chops it home. It's his...
On the official home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650 and the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Another win for the Vancouver Canucks to close out this five-game roadie, 3-1 over the Nashville Predators as they score three unanswered after going down 1-0 to the Preds. Dan Riccio and Bick Nizar with you for your post-game show here on the Sportsnet Radio Network. Satyar Shah will join us. Ian McIntyre will join us. And Corey Hirsch joins us from Bridgestone Arena. You could feel it maybe get a little dicey after Tomasino opened the scoring, but Hirschy, this Canucks team responded pretty quickly and carried that through the third.
Oh, they really did, and they had effort right through the lineup, which was great. They did. They had everybody on board, and sometimes when you lose guys like Horvat and Garland, what it does in your locker room is it scares the crap out of you, you know, because you get a little nervous. Oh, boy, we don't want to get spanked tonight. And it actually gives you a little bit of that nervous adrenaline and energy that you need to go out there and play well. And I always said, you know, we always used to say an injured team is a dangerous team because they got nothing to lose and they just go out and play as hard as they can.
The missing superstar theory, right? Everyone else pulls harder on the rope when the main guy is out. I'm sure, you know, when you went to the net, the other guys all rallied around the starter, right?
Yeah, well, you know what? When I went in the net, they were all a lot more nervous, so they actually played harder. And it's like we do for you, Bick. When you're out of the lineup, we all got to rally.
100%. Elias Pettersson tonight, though. Best player on the ice by a margin tonight?
Oh, well, That whole line was good. But, you know, I like Pod Colson. I like, you know,
Hirschy, we've got JT Miller waiting ringside there at Bridgestone Arena. Let's bring in Canucks' JT Miller. JT, big win for you guys to come back after going a goal down.
Yeah, that one definitely feels good. It's been a long road trip against some really good hockey teams, and, you know, the guys are sacrificing everything tonight. You know, super physical game, lots of fights, blocking shots. You know, this one feels really good.
Yeah, you finished the road trip off strong. You know, the last 40 minutes there, do you recognize that, hey, this thing's coming to an end and you just want to empty out the tanks on this road trip?
Yeah, no doubt. You know, we've played, like I said, a lot of good teams, and 2-3 on this road trip, you know, we'd like to win every game or we'd be above 500, but the fact of the matter is we played, you know, five of the best seven teams in the league and some of the hottest in the league, no doubt. So, I mean, this one feels really good. We knew it was going to be hard, but now we have a little momentum going back home. So we're going to enjoy it, rest up a couple days, and have to get ready again.
JT, you guys were actually even through the road trip. I think final numbers were 8 goals for, 8 against at 5-on-5. You guys really got to feel good about the game you've been playing at even strength.
No, we felt like that all year. You know, special teams has definitely kept us in games, and, you know, it's hurt us a lot or it's helped us a lot. It's a big part of a lot of games, and we need to find a way to, you know, finish the kill and get 2 minutes of kill right now. We need to find a way to make a bigger difference on the penalty kill. And I think the power play is doing a lot of good things. We didn't score at the beginning of the road trip, but, you know, there's a very fine line from scoring and not right now. And you know, tonight we got another big one in the third there, and it ended up being the difference. So,
congrats on the win, JT. Thanks for this.
All right, guys.
There is JT Miller, Canucks forward, after a 3-1 victory. And I got to say, Bick Nizar, Corey Hirsch here, it's probably the thing that has really impressed me the most through this road trip is how well they've played at 5-on-5. You know, they outscored Nashville 2-0 at 5-on-5. They were 8-8 through the five games on the road trip at even strength. You know, a lot of the games have been decided on special teams. We know that's how it's going to go, but you've just gone up against the best of the best in the National Hockey League and were able to keep pace at 5-on-5. I don't know if we expected that out of this team coming into this trip, Hirschy.
No, but you know what? If the penalty kill was better, I mean, that's just... But it's not. And I'll tell you why it's not, because you lost Brandon Sutter, right? I mean, that's a big penalty killer. And that would make a huge difference. He really does. So you don't have, you know, the guys that are experienced. Penalty kill is a lot of hard work, but you got to play smart too. And so, you know, I just think up top, that's where they struggle on the PK. But that's sometimes the way it is. So they're probably going to look at, you know, this summer, that's something you want to shore up, is that you want to get some good penalty killers, because you can't continue to get scored on the PK. But let's not, you know, have a negative, but because of how well they played today, and they won the last two games and they played extremely well. And Thatcher Demko, the team lives and dies around him. It really does. He didn't play well for three games. They lost three. You know, he played well the last two. They won two. And that's a heavy burden to carry, but it's his. And, you know, it's just the way it is. It's the way this team's built.
Hey, Hershey, just on that penalty kill, just you're talking about the guys up front. You know, we see it so often that the top guy is trying to pressure the puck and swing it in a direction, and the other forward's kind of staying stationary, protecting the middle. Does that put too much strain on that far side D-man? Because we started to see it on that goal. OEL's got to cover so much ground to get it to Tomasino. I'm not too sure what he's supposed to do, because it's so much area to cover.
Yeah, well, that's that's where the other forward's got to get a stick in the lane. So Tanner Pearson kind of gets I can't remember who the top forward was. I believe
Lamico.
It was Miller.
Yeah.
Okay, it was Lamico. Lamico comes across the top, and he chases that D-man to try to force him, and he can't make that pass down low, which is fine. But then that Tanner Pearson gets caught in the middle of no man's land, and what he's got to do is try to get his stick in that lane to that back door. And that's, he's kind of worried about the guy in the slot, and he's worried about the guy back door. But the guy in the slot would be Ekman Larson to come up on him, and then Tanner Pearson needs to block that pass to the back door, which he did not step up on.
It's, you know, we talk so much about Bruce Boudreau and the mentality of this team. You know, he wants to be aggressive and stay aggressive. What I found interesting about these last two games, where they've had the lead in the third period, they've played really conservative. They've played smart, but conservative, and have tried to play as boring a game as possible to close out these leads. Maybe Boudreau is maybe not as aggressive as we were led to believe, Hershey.
No, he's not. He's a little bit more old school. He's, you know, you can see their defensive structure get better and better, and especially in a game like this, right? They didn't give up a ton from the slot. Everything was from the outside, and that's Brucey Boudreau hockey. He's a smart man. He's been, that's why you have a veteran coach. So, you know, especially when they're down two of their top players. So you have to play a defensive road game. You don't have a choice. You can't attack all the time. Especially when you don't have the horses. And I thought today they played a nice job of being patient. And then you get a goal from Besser and Pedersen, right? How many times have we said, hey, you know, those games that they lost by one goal, well, they didn't get any goals from Besser or Pedersen at the start of the year. And those are their guys that are supposed to score goals. They get two tonight. And then Lamico chips in as a, you know, and then all of a sudden, hey, well, they won a hockey game. And that's just the way it is.
We do got to talk about Thatcher Demko. You kind of mentioned him there briefly. You know, he's back in spectacular form all of a sudden, and just crushing. And you know, I think it's interesting that when you have a goalie like that, okay, you can take a few more chances and you get to rely on him to stop a couple of breakaways there. But also, do you want to expose him that much? It's always that interplay of, you know, for a coach's decision of how aggressive do you want to be to expose your goalie.
Yeah, you have to give him a chance to stop the puck, because if you do, he will. If you've given up a bunch of two-on-ones, breakaways, you're going to get scored on. That's when you give guys time and space, that's when NHL shooters, they'll bury it every time. But if you can take away time and space and not give up odd man rushes, and it gives your goalie a chance. And with a goalie like Thatcher Demko, I mean, how many times have we said, wow, you know, he just got beat cleanly from the blue line, or you know, or there wasn't, not very often. So if you give him a chance to see it, he's going to stop it. But you have to take away a guy's time and space so that they have to get it off quickly, and can't be so accurate. So that helps out Thatcher Demko too. And if you do, he's going to be successful. This guy's going to be a top five goalie in the National Hockey League one day if he isn't already. And teams, you know, around the league are like, this guy's good. He's really good. And they're trying to pick spots on him. But he doesn't have a lot of weaknesses. You see teams going after his glove and they don't get it there. You see them going after his blocker side and they keep trying. But there's not a lot of weaknesses in Thatcher Demko's game.
Hershey, appreciate the time as always. Thank you.
Thanks, guys. Have a good night.
There is Corey Hirsch, our color analyst here for Canucks Hockey on the Sportsnet Radio Network. It's Dan Riccio and Bick Nizar, 604-280-0650, 1-888-275-0650. What grade do you give the Canucks on the Murderer's Row road trip? Bick, we heard from JT Miller, and, you know, he unprompted mentioned we just played five of the best seven teams in hockey, and I feel mm-hmm. we played pretty good through this trip.
No, for sure, and I think that's a huge part of this is they, again, 5-on-5 held their own, and he also went out of his way to mention, hey, we got to get a kill and all that sort of stuff, and 5-on-5 held their own. I think the style of opponent also matters here. You know, against Tampa, it felt easier because Tampa's not a burner. Florida, they can play with a lot of pace, and you see a 3-goal advantage there. Carolina, they can play with a lot of speed and a lot of aggressiveness all over the ice. That's a 3-goal advantage. Washington, a bit heavier. You see them contend and win. Tonight, Nashville's got a couple of fast skaters, but overall, they're not wave after wave of speed, and they can contend with it. It's, you know, styles make fights in every sport and in boxing, wherever. Styles make fights, and certain teams they're going to struggle against because they can play really, really fast against a team like Nashville. Again, you saw that they can contend, and by and large, they've been getting a passing grade and then some 5-on-5.
8-8, the final numbers through the five games. They had 8 goals scored, 8 goals against at 5-on-5. I'd say that's pretty good for where this team is. And some of the players they've been missing to win tonight's game, certainly without Bo Horvat and Connor Garland, that's huge, especially knowing you're not going to have those guys coming home for Florida, St. Louis, and the 3-game homestand you've got coming up. These are, like, every point is massive for the Canucks in their quest to get back into the playoff chase. But I just feel like, you know, they've really got to buy in to this new style that the coach has implemented. And, you know, maybe they can't be as aggressive as Boudreau would ultimately like them to be with their full complement of players. But they've still found ways to have a lot of success and be really strong defensively. Like, I know they've had a couple of breakdowns that lead to odd man rushes, but for the most part, you know, they have been really strong defensively under Bruce Boudreau. And I think that was something maybe we didn't expect out of the gate when the hire was made, but they have been better that way, Bick.
Yeah, and I think the only trouble spot, obviously Carolina, right? That was a very tough game. But
I mean, know, Carolina's just
they're a buzzsaw, man. Yeah, like, the second period against the Washington Capitals, like, that's the stretch where I say, oh, don't replicate that. And yeah, for a bit here tonight, the second period in that game. But again, the trouble spot over a 5-game road trip is a very small sample size here relative to where they were in the first 25 games. And you would see it once a game. It's like, oh, here they go running around again, too many chances against, and they can't get out of their own zone. You barely see that anymore. Again, it's incremental improvements. And that's why that 5-on-5 number there, you mentioned 8 goals against, 8 goals for, you break even on a difficult road trip. And let's also throw in the context of, like, they were starting from a break. Mm-hmm. Like, Florida, Tampa, Carolina, all these teams are playing games. Canucks had to come off of a break and catch their legs up. And again, I'm curious to see how they build upon this. Similar to how we talked about this team, once Boudreau took over, there's going to be the natural bounce back from a new coach taking over. But, you know, we ended that San Jose game thinking, okay, or the Columbus game, that road trip, because we kind of thought where the whole variant was going, we kind of thought it would be the last game. But the homestand ended. It's like, okay, how do you build upon this into the rest of the season? And the break kind of just shut everything down, and you get those three games. But it's back to maybe where it should have been in the middle of December.
Canucks had played three games in 25 days when they started this road trip last Tuesday in Florida against the Panthers. They end up with four of a possible 10 points. Let's hear from the coach, Bruce Boudreau, after a 3-1 win over the Nashville Predators.
Bruce, you said winning the last two games of this trip would make it a fabulous one. Do you concur with your earlier assessment?
Yeah, I really do believe. I mean, you take the five teams that we just played. I mean, we didn't win them all, but coming back in the last two, and especially when you're missing some key components to your team, it was a big win. And I mean, it's getting us closer to where we want to be.
You challenged Nils Höglander earlier today, Bruce, and his line was dominant when they're in terms of shot possession tonight. What about his effort tonight? I thought that line was pretty good.
Yeah, especially in the second period. I thought it's amazing what a little confidence can do when Pettersson scored that goal and both Pods and Hagi got an assist. It seemed like their whole mindset jumped up and played at a level they hadn't played at in a few games. So it's sometimes getting a point here and a point there, it's really good for your mindset, especially for young players. And they showed it today, and we needed it. And they came to play.
Hi, Bruce. You said at the start of this trip that you would know a lot more about your team at the end of it. What have you learned? What are your takeaways?
Well, I mean, we have a lot of heart. We've got a great goaltender. There's no doubt about it. And when we do make mistakes, he stopped two or three clean-cut breakaways tonight, and he's a wall back there. And when you have that, it's a little bit of relief when the team isn't doing exactly what they're supposed to be doing. Also, you know, learn that there's a lot of heart. There's a lot of will and a lot of want. And I use that phrase a lot. And it's out there, and especially when it was, you know, when we tied the game, and you could see that we wanted this game a lot. It meant a lot to us, and to be able to go with a two game winning streak home where we haven't been in over a month, and look forward to being there, you know, in a couple of days. But I think the big thing is belief and want, and that these guys want it. They don't want to sit. They don't want to be thought of as a bottom place team or anything like that. They've got the heart. A lot of them have hearts of lions, and it showed in this trip.
And you mentioned getting home. I'm not sure you remember what it's like to have last change, but no. How much should it spur the guys and kind of fuel the momentum? I'm sure the guys are all looking forward to getting some home games too.
I would think so. Like, I mean, you know, every team loves to much prefer to play at home, and we're no different. And I think we left when we were playing at home the last time playing, we were playing pretty well. And the fans were really, you know, giving us the support that the players I thought needed. And it was great. So it'll be good to get there, even though, you know, we're again playing top-notch teams in Florida and St. Louis to start the trip. And so, I mean, you always, you know, it's always a tough go, but I think it'll make for a nice flight home tonight.
Bruce, you get a big insurance goal from that Lamico line again tonight. How would you describe what they've given you over the five games on the road this trip?
Well, they've given me, for the most part, you know, a shutdown line. And I thought that was really important. Like, I mean, you could load up the first two lines when everybody was healthy, and then you could have a third line that was a shutdown line, and they were relishing the role. I mean, we had to move it around tonight, you know, with Bo out and Garland out and as much, but I mean, you know, I mean, they still gave it their all against a good team, and it was probably, they can all skate, which is really important when you're just getting in other people's faces and hoping that they, you know, don't succeed. So, if you can have that criteria as a coach, it's great.
I'm not sure if it's too soon for you to really have a full picture of this, But do you have any update on when you might expect to have Horvat, Garland, Halak rejoin your team, additionally Travis Hamonic?
I hope it's in the year 2022 at some point. That's all I know. I really have no idea what the border rules are anymore, how long they have to stay. I guess when we get back, we'll find out about Hamonic. But I really would love to be able to sound intelligent and give you a day when they're coming back. But I don't know as of this moment.
Bruce, just wanted to follow up on the first night that you took over behind the bench. And obviously you had a ton of stuff going on, but there was sort of that moment where you couldn't remember Juho Lamico's name. He was one of the goal scorers that night. And obviously, you know his name now, and he's starting to make a name for himself. We don't talk about him a lot, but what do you see in his game?
Well, I mean, he's a big centerman. And I mean, the game previous in Washington, he was 11-1 on the draws. He wasn't as good tonight, but at the same time, those big defensive centermen are hard to find in this game. And if we can develop him into that role, and he's surely relishing it right now, again, it'll be something found that nobody really knew we found. And it'll be a great bonus for the Canucks.
That is Canucks head coach Bruce Boudreau after a 3-1 win. Loves his goaltender, thinks his team has got a lot of heart and want coming out of this road trip. And I know those may not be the most glowing takeaways from the coach, but at the same time, you know, this team did have to dig deep with all of the absences and things that they've had to fight through this road trip, Bic.
Yeah, you know, COVID absences, Halak, Garland, Horvat, you just rally and rebound and try to be resilient. And, you know, I think that's something that this team hopefully is learning of how to be resilient, because they were left on the canvas after 25 games. And some big questions were being asked, and you know, all you can do is play out the next game until transactions happen or in case coaches get let go and all that sort of stuff. All you can do is play the next game. And it's a credit to the players for being resilient, persisting through and showing, hey, who they actually are, and really upping their play. And I think this road trip, again, 4 out of 10 points, and I know a lot of people are texting in their grades, keep sending them in, 650, 650. I think it ends on a high note. And for me, 4 points was what they needed to get. It was a very, very difficult road trip, but now you look at it, and they're on pace for 82. They stabilized their season. They consolidated a bit of a losing streak. And now this is the platform you build upon, right? You're 500 throughout the course of the year. And now it's just a chase the rest of the way, and it's a reasonable chase for them to get back into it.
And, well, tough days are not ending. They don't know when they'll have Bo Horvat or Connor Garland or Jaro Halak back in the lineup. Travis Hamonic, speculation he'll be able to return to the lineup on Friday. He has yet to play a road game this year, which is interesting, but we'll see if he's able to return to the lineup. Will they call up Jack Rathbone? You know, a lot of things we can discuss through the course of the post-game show. Your calls are welcome. Your texts are welcome. 650-650 on the Dunbar Lumber text line. On the phone line, 604-280-0650. Also looking for your grades. The Murderer's Row road trip. What have we learned about the Canucks through this tough road trip? It's Dan Riccio and Bic Nizar. More of you on the Canuck Central postgame next. Brought to you by Kintec Footwear and Orthotics on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Your feet are your foundation. When you experience foot pain and injuries, it can create a barrier to maintaining an active lifestyle. At Kintec Footwear and Orthotics, a fitting expert will help you find the perfect fit through the Kintec Fit System. Developed and refined over the last 30 years, the Kintec Fit System has helped more than 500,000 customers move better and go further. Book your free 30-minute one-to-one appointment today at Kintec.net.
Kintec Footwear and Orthotics. This is a call out.
A shout out.
A chance to reach out.
To small businesses, charities, and organizations that support equity-deserving groups.
BIPOC. LGBTQIA2S+.
Women.
Persons with disabilities.
Together with Rogers Sports and Media, let's promote progress.
By promoting your brand.
On City TV.
Sportsnet.
Breakfast Television.
FX, Omni. City Line.
This station.
And more.
Inclusion and diversity.
We're all in.
Apply now at allinforequity.ca.
Allinforequity.ca.
Let's shop better to help us reach our goals so we can live healthier. Let's shop for style and comfort that stand the test of time. Let's shop smarter with daily offers and interest-free payments so we can spend wisely. Let's shop brands that are true to our values, like buying Canadian. Let's reconnect with what truly matters and celebrate life to the fullest. Let's shop better at tsc.ca.
Kyle Granlund lost the puck, and it goes all the way back down into the Vancouver end. As Demko leaves his crease, his net is still off its moorings, but here's a breakaway chance the other way for Podkolzin, and on goal, stopped by Rinne Greenough, they score! Elias Pettersson followed up, he's got another one, his third in the last two games, and the Canucks tie it at one before the eight-minute mark of the second period.
There you go, another second effort by Pettersson, and what a goal this is.
Elias Pettersson continuing to get the job done for the Canucks. That got it back to 1-1. Besser ends up with the winner, and Juho Lamico gave the Canucks the insurance marker. They win 3-1 in Nashville. It's Dan Riccio and Bick Nizar. The Canucks Central postgame show is presented by Kintec Footwear and Orthotics. Do your feet hurt? Kintec can help. Talk to a fitting expert today at 11 Lower Mainland locations or online at kintec.net. A lot of you want to get in on the conversation. Bick, what's happening on our Dunbar Lumber text line, 650-650?
Yeah, keep sending us a text to the Dunbar Lumber text message inbox asking for your grades on the road trip. A couple of C-pluses coming in, but mostly Bs, B-pluses. Ryan Shemanis says C-plus, but it feels like a B-minus. It's like when you wake up on a Thursday and it feels like a Tuesday today. Ryan Chavez with that text covered in 650-650. Mike says, looks like Banning put together a pretty good team into the Dunbar Lumber inbox. And yeah, just a lot of thoughts on Kristen Duncan, B-plus on the Murderers Row road trip. Three losses against Stanley Cup contenders. Canucks aren't a Stanley Cup team yet and did very well against the second-tier teams.
Well, I do feel like if we're grading it on results, coming into the trip, I think an A would have been getting 6 points or more. Like, you get a 600 points percentage on this road trip, you are laughing, right? But that's the thin margins here. They end up with 4 out of a possible 10. 5 was always going to be the respectable goal that they set for themselves. Anything more than that would have been absolute gravy. I mean, especially the first three teams that they played on this trip, you can't, like, they're all Stanley Cup contenders. One of them is back-to-back champs, right? Florida is looking to chase down that team, and Carolina is the number one team in the league so far through the regular season. So it's as difficult a road trip as you will find in the NHL, and the Canucks acquitted themselves pretty well. Like, I feel it pretty hard to give them anything less than a B minus, really, given how they played in the overall results, maybe a little bit short of what you would have liked, but process wise, they kept up with most of these teams.
Yeah, and I came into the road trip, you know, just wanting to see, because we're still in the evaluation phase of this Vancouver Canucks under the new regime with Rutherford and Boudreaux. We're still trying to discern, you know, what's real, what things do you need to peg down long-term and all that sort of stuff. And for me, it was always going to be about the process. You wouldn't want to have seen 0 points, but if they played well and, you know, fought to the death in these games and ultimately lost in late in the third or something like that, you could be encouraged coming through this difficult of a road trip. But hey, they get points. They, you know, Carolina game aside, look good in all four given the circumstances. Of them coming back after a long break, I think you can be encouraged after this road trip. It's probably a B plus to me, but certainly progress, and I think getting back to where they were middle of December.
It is the Canuck Central post-game show brought to you by Kintec Footwear and Orthotics, keeping you active and on your feet for life. 604-280-0650, 1-888-275-0650. Let's go to the phone boards. Let's start with Nigel in Langley. Nigel, how you feeling about this road trip? What's your grade for them?
Hey, lively lads. Yeah, I would have to give them a B-. Two wins out of five against the caliber of teams that we played. I'm fairly happy. The first two games, when we lost against Florida and Tampa Bay, Demko was the second best goalie on the ice. Usually he's the best goalie, but he didn't even have to steal one of those games. It's just, you know, like he gives up five goals out of 26 shots to Florida, and we had 44 shots, so I thought we were unlucky not to win that one. And then he gave up three goals on 20 shots in the second game. So, you know, kind of un-Demko-like. But even in the third game against Carolina, we were 0 for 4 on the power play. But when after we lost the first three games, all of a sudden, holy jiminy crickets, as Harry Meeker used to say, our power play comes alive. And we got two the other night in Washington, and we get a power play goal tonight, and we ended up with two wins. So that was quite encouraging, and it'll be really interesting to see how the Canucks play out this upcoming home streak. So I'll leave it at that. Thanks, guys.
Thanks for the call, Nigel. Always appreciate you calling in to the post-game show. And you know, Demko is an interesting part of the conversation here, Bic. He wasn't poor early on in the road trip, but it was a good way to categorize it. He was the second best goalie on those nights. That wasn't the case against Nashville, and it certainly wasn't the case against Washington. And, you know, it was the first thing Bruce Boudreau mentioned about his takeaway from this team. We've got a really good goaltender. You know, the Canucks absolutely need Demko at the top of his game if they're going to put together the kind of results they need to make a playoff push.
Yeah, and I always get confused in that, you know, conversation with goalies. It's, yeah, you don't apologize for good goaltending, and you don't leave your guys out to dry. It's, I don't know, at some point you have to respect what a goalie can do and understand he's part of your team. He is part of the team. He doesn't just live on an island despite having a crease there. You know, Thatcher Demko is very much part of this team. He's very skilled, and it's part of the equation of building out a roster because you see what happens. Well, look at Edmonton right now. Look at some teams across the league that don't have goaltending. It's an important thing to figure out. It's just how many resources do you dedicate to figuring it out? How much money do you allocate to it? Right now, the Canucks have got a great netminder on a great contract, and you build around that. And there are going to be nights when he's the show. And tonight, for me, he was the show.
Well, if Demko were to, like, have, let's say Cal Peterson's contract comes in before Demko's, how much does that change the number? Like, we're already looking at Demko, like, this is the first year of his five-year deal at $5 million on the average annual value. It's probably the best goalie contract in the league or thereabouts. Maybe UC Saros is in that conversation. I guess Jack Campbell's on a really good deal right now, but he's going to get paid in the off season, no matter where he ends up.
Shesterkin's deal is great.
Shesterkin's deal is really good, but like Demko's right up there with one of the best value long-term contracts you could have for a goalie.
And that's what you guys do. You're getting, you know, $8 million production out of Thatcher Demko, and you're paying him $5 million. That's how you create margins of victory. So now you look at it and say, okay, where can we spend $3 million elsewhere because we're getting that much value on this deal? Now, the Canucks haven't necessarily won making up the value elsewhere. You have some inefficient contracts on your books, whether it be, you know, Myers or OEL or Pearson or Dickinson. There's some bloated contracts on this roster, but you know, when you save money and create value on your roster, that's what allows you to do. You can splurge a little bit elsewhere on the roster.
Let's go to PK. PK, your grade for the Canucks through the Murderers Row road trip.
Hey, Reach, I think it's a solid B, right, for Bus, right? They wrote it, gone on and off with excitement, paid their dues, nothing fancy, maybe even saw some people they knew. What do you guys think, right? Pretty crispy game tonight.
Was a pretty crispy game. They were pretty good. It's PK coming in. Gives them a B, and... You know, I think it's honestly fair, and even seeing on the Dunbar Lumber text line, Tavi coming in, I'll give them a B solely on the fact they bounced back from three losses with some good efforts and to get two wins in a row to end it, also because it exposed some of the team's areas for improvement. And look, I don't want to say that the Canucks are close, because they, you know, to go from where they are to being a Stanley Cup contender is pretty much the hardest thing that an NHL GM has to do. Going from good to great is very difficult, but you're feeling good about the core again with guys like Pettersson and Besser scoring, Hughes playing the way that he is, Miller being the leader that he is for this group. And as I've always said, if you feel good about the core of this team, you know, filling in around the edges, it becomes at least an easier task in theory. It's just, you know, the difficulties they'll have doing that are with the lack of salary cap space, the lack of trade assets that they have. So it's still a very difficult road ahead, but I think this road trip is bringing back some of the confidence I had in a lot of the core players that had been assembled.
For sure. And, you know, I referenced the evaluation phase. It was entirely evaluating the top players of this organization. That's what it was about. Because it's, you know, it's easy to sit there and evaluate Tyler Mott and Matt Highmore and those, you know, your depth players. Because there's limitations to it. And they're an important part of the overall construction of your roster. But, you know, the roster is defined by Elias Pettersson, Brock Besser, Bo Horvat, Quinn Hughes, JT Miller, your star level players, Connor Garland. How those guys perform is where this team goes. And a lot of those guys needed to reclaim a certain level of form. Pettersson, we're starting to see it. Brock Besser had a mini goal scoring streak. Obviously gets the game winner tonight. It's that sort of stuff that you need to start seeing from this group. And finally, they're starting to show up to reaffirm how a lot of people felt about those players.
It's the Canuck Central post-game show brought to you by Kintec Footwear and Orthotics, keeping you active on your feet for life. Let's go back to the phone boards. Mike in Surrey. Mike, how you feeling about the Canucks right now?
Oh, they're on a roll. I'm feeling positive, as I predicted. The day Boudreaux came in, first day or two, got them for 100-1 for the conference. They're going to make the playoffs. Oh, just cashing. It's just hanging, you know, just the air of positivity here. But I have to fire back at Betting Bros. Have to, because they just won't admit when they're defeated, right? They're saying, oh, this great team Benning got together. All you have to say is, what would have happened? Where would they be if they had fired Green in the summer and got Boudreaux in the summer? They'd be right near the top of the division, guys. There you go. That's another reason why Benning should be gone. Thanks, guys. You're doing great.
Thanks for the call, Mike. Going way back into the takes of the early part of the season. You know, yeah, I think we knew it at the time that, you know, not just at the GM position, but at the coaching position, a change was needed much sooner than they actually went about and made it. And the owner even somewhat admitted to that when, you know, Bruce Boudreaux was introduced and Jim Rutherford were introduced. It's a reality that this team is now having to live with, but they're on a better path. So if you're looking at it glass half full wise, you can take it that way.
Yeah, I do wonder about the processes, though, in that scenario.
Yep.
I said this before, because, look, they left the coach out to dry for a year. That's what happened, and you generally wouldn't do that. And so if you kind of make the promise of, hey, we're going to leave you out to a year because we're putting a pause in everything, we'll take care of you in the off season, and then you don't, that is an awful, awful look. And you know, we'd sit here and say, well, good luck attracting the next head coach and the next job. So as frustrating as those 25 games were, and perhaps it should have come earlier. I still think you had to play that out. You still had to play that out. But look, that's washed away. That's yesterday. The Canucks here are today. They're winning. They're focused on tomorrow. And we are getting a lot of texts say, what happens here on the homestand? Are they actually going to play these games? There's a few of these texts coming in, 650, 650. Canucks do plan on playing those games this weekend at half capacity. A statement came out earlier today from Michael Doyle. Said, we continue to work closely with Dr. Henry and the local health authorities. Plan to play our upcoming homestand beginning Friday versus Florida. We are at an important point in the pandemic. We'll do all, and what we all do today will keep us safe and will help get us back to a normal state as soon as possible. Health, safety of our fans, employees, players, community, always a top priority, and we'll follow protocols to maintain a safe environment for everyone, including proof of vaccination, scanning for all fans at Rogers Arena and Abbotsford Center.
50% is what the expectation is for this three-game homestand. The schedule is probably going to come out tomorrow for the Vancouver Canucks. At least that's what we are led to believe of what it's going to look like through February. They are going to have a lot of home games there as well. This next month is huge for the team. They plan, as Frank Saravalli told us on Canuck Central yesterday, plan to have a GM in place by February 1st. A lot's going to happen. The games are going to be happening. Jim Rutherford's going to be settling his front office and, laying out the groundwork for the way forward for the roster and how he sees it over the next little while as well. But, you know, all those games that had been postponed and planned three games in 25 days, well, you had a lot of days off then. You're not going to have many days off coming up. So, you know, this is these next couple of weeks is essentially where the Canucks season gets decided, Bick.
Yep, for sure. And the postponements, whether they were done for business reasons, safety reasons, you know, I tend to believe they were for business reasons. It was always a hopeful attempt because the variant's not going anywhere, right? But I think it was a worthwhile attempt to try to get a full building, and we'll see how it plays out here through February. The expectation is middle of February, but the schedule is going to get a bit crowded, but nevertheless, you take advantage of your opportunities now.
One thing I do know, there was speculation of whether or not, 50% was even going to be allowed for that Ottawa game. Mm-hmm. That ended up getting postponed. So there's more to the story there.
Yes, yes.
But one thing, as much as yes, business concerns were the number one thing in that game getting postponed, and some of these other games getting postponed. That was not only from Canucks ownership, that was also from the league. And number two, like talking to some players around the league and in other Canadian markets. They don't like playing in front of an empty building, man. Like,
and we all collectively hated it.
Yes.
All of us. And I know people want to follow the schedule, but again, I'm fine to try to maximize 100% capacity and give yourself every opportunity to pull that off.
Yeah. Now, one thing I learned during the last season and playing in front of empty crowds, I used to say the crowd is overrated and the way people talk about it, and the 12th man in football or whatever it may be, right? I don't feel that way anymore. Like, the crowd matters. It adds an emotion. It adds an intensity to the game that's just not there when the crowd isn't involved. So the more games we can have with any kind of a crowd, 50%, great. The more games we can have with 100%, absolutely, sign me up. That's what this is all about. So, something I came around on, certainly, through the course of this pandemic. It's Dan Riccio and Bick Nizar. Let's try to get in another call here. Let's go to Raj in Surrey. Raj, how are you feeling about Pedersen's game right now?
I'm feeling really, really good. I actually called in just to talk about that a couple of days ago, I think, after they lost against the Lightning. I called in. I said, take him off the power play. He's standing in front of the net. I hate it. And then it's weird because they took him off the power play the next game. They put him on power play two. But the power play goal he scored last game got him going, and now he has three So I'm just happy his game is back. I'd rate the Canucks' road trip a B- just because they played today without Horvat and Garland. So
yeah,
they played really well today. And lastly, I really think the one thing that messed us up and that a lot of people forget about now that Mott's contract is coming up is that he's a really big deal on the power play. I mean, on the penalty kill. And our penalty kill has got day and night, like a huge difference from where it was before. And I feel like, you know, Mott's the key to this team in terms of penalty killing. And he's really good as a forward. I hope they sign him. If he goes this trade deadline, I think it'll be really bad for the Canucks. That's about it.
There's Raj in Surrey. A few different takes there. Should we start on Patterson, Vic?
Go figure. You know, talented players start to rebound. You know, shooting percentages don't stay low forever. Pick and choose your cliche star level players.
Am I wrong to say that he looks different though? Like right now, he looks more engaged, and maybe that is just confidence in that he pops a little bit more. He's making more of the right decisions. He's more convicted in his. He's showing conviction in his decision making while on the ice, that he's making it in that split second rather than having that half a beat where he's hesitating that just throws a play away.
Okay, but how much I'm only judging it on the post-Boudreaux era, right? So we're at what, game 13 here?
Yeah.
14? If we didn't have the context of the first 25, would you have been that worried of what you saw on this road trip?
No.
Like, the there was the odd, you know, the bad game. You're like, oh, I don't know, blah, blah, is he still trying to get back? But if it was just a random couple of games here, we wouldn't have this level of concern. Now, because of the context of the first 25 and the injury, there's so much concern.
He's looked he's looked really good since Thursday.
Yeah, like the road trip, like he was fine on the road trip. We're constantly comparing it to the first 25 games.
Yeah.
But like the road trip was totally fine for Elias Pettersson.
Love the calls. Love the texts. We'll keep them coming here on the Canuck Central post-game show. Have some thoughts on Tyler Mott as well. I know it's becoming an increasing debate of should they keep Mott, should they trade him at the deadline. We'll weigh in on that as the post-game show rolls on. Satyar Shah will stop by as well. So lots still to come. The Canucks winning 3-1 in Nashville to close out this road trip. Dan Riccio and Vic Nizar, the Kintec Footwear and Orthotics Canucks Central postgame show on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Feels good to get two wins here to end it. You know, we were kind of in a tougher circumstance at the start of the trip. Just trying to get our legs back a little bit, I think. But you know, we kind of expected that, obviously, coming off 10 days. We knew we were coming in to play some good teams. And, you know, I didn't think we played necessarily terrible games, but, you know, we weren't able to get a result. So that's all that matters. And we're at least coming away with two to end it, which is great.
There is Thatcher Demko making some big-time stops again tonight, leading the Canucks to a victory. He makes 31 of a possible 32 saves in this 3-1 win for the Canucks over the Nashville Predators. It's Dan Riccio and Bick Nizar here on the Canucks Central postgame show, brought to you by Kintec Footwear and Orthotics, keeping you active and on your feet for life. It's Demko's world, we're all just living in it sometimes, but there was a couple of really big stops, and probably the biggest one was on Eli Tolvanen, just off the shoulder, ends up hitting the post, but yeah. If Demko doesn't get a piece of it, you know, all of a sudden this game script might have changed.
He had one against Tomasino as well in the second period, the 4-on-3. You know, that one where he's bearing down, puck hits Demko, goes out of play. Like it's those small margins, right? And the Canucks, you know, they gave up some chances, but he's special, man. He's special, and like we were talking about, his contractual value. You're not overpaying. You're not paying $9-10 million for this level of goaltending play. It is fantastic to see him thrive.
So a couple of things. We're going to keep getting to your phone calls, your text messages, 650, 650 on the Dunbar Lumber text line. Raj talked about it earlier. I know we get a lot of texts and tweets about it, but Tyler Mott, you know, he is going to be the big name ahead of the deadline. I know people are, and we'll continue to talk about Miller and Horvat and those types of things, but, you know, the biggest pressure point is Mott because he's an unrestricted free agent at the end of the year. And, you know, he's going to cost a lot more money than he's currently costing. So how do you view Tyler Mott in the future of the Vancouver Canucks?
I think it's one of those things. I know a lot of fans love Tyler Mott, and I think Tyler Mott's been a fantastic, you know, servant for the Vancouver Canucks. But I'm just not sure you can be committed to the idea of, hey, he's our most valuable penalty killer, and we have to keep him at whatever cost. Because the cost might be, you know, $2.4, $2.5 million. And at that stage, you have to trust a Matt Highmore to say, hey, can you be a penalty killer? Because we have club control of you. And how are you supposed to usher in, you know, Will Lockwood into the lineup at some point? This is how you recoup some of these assets. You know, we're talking earlier, it's like, oh, the asset isn't really flush. There's not a lot of prospects, and they haven't, you know, loaded up on draft picks. It's these types of trades and this type of integration in the next wave of players is what you kind of have to do. And I think the most sensible thing at some point is to try to capitalize on that and hope you have internal improvement. And that's, you know, by and large, assuming that they don't make this miraculous run to push themselves comfortably into a playoff spot. But I still think that's a conversation you entertain, because you need guys from within to take over these roles. And I know that's tough to hear for a lot of fans, but that's the reality. Like, I don't know if you can live in a world where you're paying fourth liners $2.5 million. They just went through that.
Yeah.
And it didn't work. And now suddenly Jason Dickinson's making 2.65 and Tanner Pearson makes 3.2, and you want guys to surpass them on the depth chart, and it's going to happen. Like, within a year, you know, hopefully Vasily Podkolzin's a mainstay in the top six, and hopefully Nils Höglander rounds out his game and Tanner Pearson's a third liner. That's what you want, but at some point that contract becomes a bit inefficient.
It's one of the biggest failures of the Benning Arabic that they haven't developed anybody through the AHL to play these roles, right? They kept paying for guys. They paid for Jay Beagle. They paid for Antoine Roussel. Like, they paid for all of these guys. Yes, Tyler Mott was a good find in the Vanek trade. But again, like, these bottom six guys are guys that turn over on your roster. And when you have to pay them, you let them go somewhere else, and you fill that spot internally, or you find somebody on the free agent market that comes at a lower price to fill that role. That's just the reality of the NHL. But the biggest thing that the Canucks have run into, especially when it comes to salary cap management, is that they're always paying for these guys. They don't have internal options. Will Lockwood is supposed to be that guy. Who else do they have down there that is likely to be that player? They loaded up on guys like DiGiuseppe and Dowling, and Sheldon Rempel's doing well down with the Abbotsford Canucks. So they've got these kind of like mid-20s guys or journeyman types that may end up filling some of these roles. But, like, you want to be able to develop some of these players at the same time. And they haven't done that. You look at their draft record. Who have they developed to play bottom six roles? Like, nobody in the 7+ years of Jim Benning has come up in that way almost.
And if you're gonna fill those roles externally, you got to make low cost, high reward types of moves. And if you kind of go through Jim Rutherford's experience in Pittsburgh, you know, they've done it. It's Evan Rodriguez. Bring him in for $700K. Test him out. Okay, let's sign him to another deal. And I look at Evan Rodriguez right now, and I think that's a good player. He was better in Buffalo than people realize. He's got 30-38 right now. He had 14-35 last year. And you just get these guys to fill roles. And you can go through it in Pittsburgh, like Sam Lafferty and Teddy Bluger. Like, you go through it. They just found guys lower down their lineup and flushed them through and harnessed harness the culture of, hey, of development. Play this role. You will get minutes, and we'll find time for you if you can maximize your opportunity in this role. And there just haven't been enough guys in Vancouver to do that.
All right. Let's bring in. You saw him on the Sportsnet pre- and post-game show on the intermission analysis with Kyle Bukauskas. He's my co-host on Canuck Central here and is normally the host of the Canuck Central post-game. It's Satyar Shah, and we have an unsigned text. Come on, man. It's way past Sat's bedtime. Give him the night off. No nights off for Sat, okay?
I don't need no stinking night off. I'm here to work. That's what I'm here to do. I don't need no time off.
Yeah. What's happening?
Don't
man?
Tell the boss though. Yeah. I said that.
Don't tell. In the off season, maybe. Maybe I'll take some time then.
Yeah, in the off season. Right now, things are going well. The team's winning. You know, Why not? We're having a good time. We're having a really good time about this. I mean, hey guys. I mean, hey, how bad were things earlier this season? Mm-hmm. And how much things have changed. And hey, they went on that 3-game slide to start this road trip, and a lot of takes were kind of had about, oh, you know, now they've been exposed, and they're 500. Still got a shot.
Back at 500 after these couple of wins, how did you feel, and how do you grade out the road trip in its entirety now that it's complete?
I'd give them a C+. Overall, and the reason I give them a C+, and I know, like, honestly, I viewed, like, a B would have been 500. Like, that's how hard this road trip was, right? And anything above 500 would have been an A. And, you know, an A+ would have been a perfect road trip. But I give them a C+, considering the degree of difficulty here, right? Like, you had three tough games. And if they hadn't played well in the two games in Florida, maybe I'd be like, okay, maybe a C because they got away with it or yada, yada. But they deserve the better fate in those two Florida games, right? Carolina, we know that, okay, Carolina was the better team. They're faster. They had the night and all that sort of stuff. But I thought they probably deserved a better fate than 0-4 in points in the first two games. So not only that, then you go in a situation where Halak goes into protocol. So that means you got to lean on Demko even more coming out of the break. And he plays himself into form, right? And then the other thing that happens is Garland goes into protocol. Then Bo Horvat goes into protocol. And then you still find a way to win the final two games of this road trip to keep yourself kind of alive through this race. It doesn't get easy here coming up in these three games at home. Those are not easy opponents. Even Edmonton, you know, they'll probably be raring to go on that third game of that homestand coming up here. But all things considered, I don't know how you can view this road trip and call it a colossal failure. It wasn't a rousing success, but the fact they were able to still get 4 points out of a possible 10, considering the degree of difficulty and everything that unfolded, I think you got to tip your cap to them to some degree.
Yeah, you know, I think Reach and I both had a bit of a higher grade on it, sitting closer to the B area, but, you know, I think you're encouraged by the process more so than anything, Sat. The results, you know, 4 points out of 10, it keeps them at 82 points pace, which is 500, and that's all well and good. But, you know, the 5-on-5 play is the thing that really stood out, that they managed to hang. They managed to survive and hang with this caliber of team.
And that's the thing. I mean, we were kind of wondering, are they going to be able to hang on the same sheet of ice with some of these teams, especially the higher-end teams that play in Florida? And I thought they handled those teams pretty good. The game that exposed them the most was a Carolina game, not because the opponent was great, just because of the pace they play with. And part of it was how they were raring to go, too, after being drubbed 6-0 by the Columbus Blue Jackets, you know, prior to that. So they were really motivated for that game against the Canucks. But I thought what was really exposed in that game was their lack of speed overall. That's what has to kind of improve, and that's something Rutherford himself talked about. But they actually played fairly well against heavier teams. You saw how well they acquitted themselves against the Capitals. And even tonight, despite the fact that the third period, you know, the Preds kind of took over and it really started tilting the ice to the other end, they were trailing. And they got some speed, but they're more of a heavier team as well. They kind of like to play down low and like to grind you. And the Canucks acquitted themselves well against that type of opponent. So I think what was very clear here is the opponent that gave them the most trouble was a team that has the most speed. And that's kind of what you have to shore up. But big picture, how your team was able to just hold its own at times in this during this road trip, you're right, Bick. I think it's encouraging that overall they weren't getting heavily outchanced. You go through the metrics, you go through the process. It was actually a pretty good process overall, considering everything going on for this team.
Boudreaux's getting a lot out of them. You know, I feel my takeaway from the trip is it restored my confidence in some of the core players. And at the forefront, you know, it's obviously Elias Pettersson, who not just the goals, but the way he's seeing the ice and outside of, you know, the end of the first period tonight, I felt like he was a lot more convicted in his decision-making on the ice, Sat. And that's, you know, you saw the creativity coming out and just the assuredness that he started to play with again.
You know, last year, one of the things I kind of joked about Pettersson was he's like Captain Marvel when he's on his game. Like, he lights up on the ice and you see him just be involved in everything. And that's kind of what we saw tonight. We saw a gradual increase in his play and how much better he got as time went on over that three-game stretch. But tonight was a game like he was alive. Like, that was him being plugged into the Matrix tonight. That's what we saw from Elias Pettersson. And that's not to say he can't get better. I still think there's more to his game he hasn't shown yet. He can still get better than what he's shown so far. But tonight, he was completely alive. And he played center, guys. He played down the middle. We spent so much time on Canuck Central talking about, Dan, hey, what if he plays wing? And what if you don't take him off the wing position? Can he play center again? When do you have to see him go back to that position? Well, it took one game. He was right back at it, and he carried that line. Give Hoglander credit. Podkolzin did a lot of good things, too. But Pettersson was the kingmaker on that line again. And we hadn't seen quite that happen yet. And you're right. I mean, the confidence was there, and I think it was very evident, especially on the power play early on. Just the subtle little deft passes he made. The fact that he wasn't losing the puck when he's trying to stick handle it and trying to deke guys. And the worst mistake he made all game was at the end of the first period where he kind of misreads the puck and he's trying to get it up to Quinn Hughes and, you know, kind of splits and gets out and time kind of runs out. That's the only sequence in that game I can recall where Pettersson didn't quite have it. So despite the goal scoring and all that, which is great, he looks like a different player now.
Captain Marvel, Matrix, do you have an Indiana Jones reference you want to drop in here as well? Was Nils Hoglander a junior then?
Oh, Nils Hoglander is definitely a junior.
Yeah.
And he also got a talking to early on from Boudreau, and now he's redeeming himself on the airplane.
So as great as Pettersson was, and again, he's part of the story of these last two games, to me, the reason of victory, Thatcher Demko, man. Thatcher Demko, we've been talking about his contractual value a lot here on the postgame show, but sparkling performance once again.
Oh, I mean, what else do you have to say about him? And, you know, we talked about the first couple of games against the Florida teams. The thing that actually let them down the most, outside of their top-end guys not scoring, which was a big issue up until they got things going against the Capitals, was Demko didn't quite have his game. And maybe we're a bit harsh on Demko because we've seen him play at such a high level. He essentially had one goal each game, which was kind of iffy. And that was enough for the team not to be able to get a point out of it, right? So he wasn't the main reason they lost, but he couldn't help them win games that they needed early on. But that's also because he had a layoff. He hadn't really honed in again. But the last couple of games, now against the Capitals, I thought the Canucks, for the most part, were the better team. But tonight, especially in that third period, guys, and the times when they had those clear breakaways, Thatcher Demko was magnificent tonight, especially to end a road trip the way they did. I mean, there was no concern about Thatcher Demko. The only question we had was, how long does it take him to play himself into shape again? And do you worry about him playing too much with Jaroslav Halak being in protocol? The thing that benefited the team, though, was the layoff he had heading into it, but also the fact that they did not have back-to-backs and outside of the weekend, and he played right through it. So I think the schedule worked out to benefit Demko to play as many games as he had, to play all five games on this trip and get better, because if they did not have all the runway leading up to the five games, yeah, maybe he would have played better against the Florida teams, but I certainly think it helped him on the back end. So Thatcher Demko, without him, you're not coming away with 4 points on this road trip.
No, you're not. And, you know, he is such a valuable part of this team. When IMAC asked Boudreau after the game and what his takeaway is from this road trip, we've got a great goaltender. You know?
Yes.
So, and even when we talked to Boudreau on Canuck Central last week, you know, he had the same takeaway. He's just like, man, this is, and I, you know, he's said it before, Quinn Hughes and Thatcher Demko are essentially the two best players he's ever had at the position, which is, you know, pretty incredible praise for both players. But when you have a goalie like Thatcher Demko, as a coach, that confidence, you know, allows you to potentially coach a team a little bit differently than you would had you not had that much confidence in your goaltender. And we've seen Boudreau be more aggressive with this team, and I think that's what's gotten them caught a little bit in these last 2 second periods against Nashville and Washington. But at the same time, you know, playing with the lead in the third, it did feel like Boudreau dialed it back a little bit and had this team playing maybe a little bit more of a conservative style than what we saw in December when they were playing with a lot of leads in the third period.
Well, and, you know, I think that kind of comes back to what we kind of talked about on Canuck Central a little bit today. Not to say that he is reverting to Travis Green, but it's interesting listening to what Boudreau has to say about this squad. Now, perhaps he also means when you have a couple of key guys in protocol, you will not have as much firepower. But this team being able to turn their higher-end talent into more consistent offense has been tough. And when Pettersson comes alive and when Bo Horvat comes back again, hey, perhaps that changes as time goes on. But I think what Boudreau's trying to figure out here is how much can I push with this team and when do I have to kind of pull back on the reins a little bit? I think that's what he's trying to figure out. And if you push too far, then yes, you will kind of expose this roster a little bit. So when you have Demko though playing at his best, you're not worried about pushing a little bit. But as soon as you don't get those saves, that's when you kind of come back to being a bit more conservative. But considering the amount of confidence there is in Demko, my guess would be once Pettersson shows he can go and you get Bo Horvat back again, I can see this team getting a bit more aggressive. But here's the reality. If you're not scoring enough, no matter how aggressive you play, and you're losing games, you got to pull back a little bit. And that's what the coach doesn't want to do, but you got to score for him to not do that.
Yeah, the goal scoring still feels like it's, and it's stunning to even say, but it still feels like the thing that they have to get corrected immediately. And, you know, the edges on the power play, it comes back to special teams, right? You can't go into games where you are expecting to give up one on the PK and you're not sure if you're going to get one on the power play yourself. It's such a mind block when you approach these games knowing how difficult it is for you on special teams.
Well, how much is it different on special teams? Sorry, I was just thinking about that and thinking about the conversation we had at the intermission, Bick. Just like, you know, again, the scheme. You watch that power play goal that they score, and it's like, what's happening? Lamico's all over the place. Pearson's stationary. You're asking OEL to do so much to close down the shot. It's just how much of it is personnel and how much is, you know, the scheme is still what's kind of questionable here.
Now, this is something we don't quite get the answer to being on the outside looking in. So how much of what we're seeing, especially with the PK struggling, is players kind of reverting back to what they've done here a lot, which is be more passive, and how much of it is instruction? And that's a question we oftentimes have, and that's the same question we had about the PK to some degree. We know that the PK personnel is lacking on this team. There's no question about it. The PK personnel is lacking. But is it lacking enough for you to be this bad at it? Now, let's also take a step back here for a second. The Canucks have played 9 games on the road. And the guys did a great job on the TV side coming up, you know, digging into some of these stats. On this latest 9-game stretch, there was a 5-game road trip, but considering they couldn't play any games at home, they've played 9 straight games on the road. Over that span, their PK hasn't been great, but it's been 70%. So where they're at now, guys, is they're normal bad. They're not historically bad. They're just normal bad on the PK. And hey, that's an improvement. It's not good enough. But that also kind of tells you that the PK personnel on this team is not good. It's not good. It's not as so bad that it should be historically bad. No team should be that bad. But they probably should be in the 70-75% range efficiency over the course of a season. That's not good, but it's somewhat manageable at least. So what they've done is they got themselves back to average bad. And hey, that's an improvement. Here's the question, though. Do you have the personnel to go above average bad? And how much of what we're seeing now during this latest trend where their PK is starting to sag a little bit, the instruction to become more passive or the players reverting back to being more passive because they lost their confidence yet again on the PK? Because even the other game, and here's the interesting part. Like, we talk about how good Thatcher Demko is. Against the Capitals, the shot that Ovechkin gets and scores on, and even the second one, usually you might see Demko stop those, right? I know it's Ovechkin, but it wasn't like, you know, the hardest shot that you've seen. Everybody's a bit tense on the PK. You can see it on the guys, right? They're not feeling as confident. They're not moving as well. They're a bit hesitant on everything they do. So I do think part of the reason it looks more passive in recent games is just that they seem a bit shell-shocked yet again on the PK.
Hey, really quickly, because we do have to go, as I'm very aware, Nils Höglander was kind of challenged and rose up to the occasion today. Again, his defensive play was questioned. They didn't spend a lot of time in the D zone, but nevertheless, he was very good tonight.
He was, and he rose to the challenge, right? And the question about him is he able to play the style that they want? Can he be a better two-way player, or does he have some limitations with his hockey sense? He's only a year and a bit into his career, so I'm not going to buy into it. He doesn't have the hockey sense. But tonight, he kind of showed that when he's on, he can still be a big-time contributor for this team.
Sats, we'll see you back in Vancouver soon. Thanks for this.
Yes, hopefully tomorrow. It's starting to snow again here. Looking out my window, it's snowing again. And considering how Toronto doesn't know how to handle snow, I hope I don't get snowed in again tomorrow.
Safe flight, buddy.
Sats coming home with snowshoes.
Yeah, toboggan, too. I'm going to slide home.
Love to see it. Thanks, man.
See you, boys.
There is Satyar Shah, the second best beard on Sportsnet tonight. Who was that behind him that you pointed out on Twitter, Bick?
It was Philip Forsberg.
Okay.
It was like the graphic for the game.
Yeah.
Like,
come on, he's not just a better beard than I do.
Go home. No, you know what it was. It was the stash, Sat. The mustache of Philip Forsberg looked phenomenal.
Yeah. Yeah. Captain Hook and all. All right, guys, I'm out.
He's right. Making jokes on Twitter, man. Leave me alone.
Love to see it. That's Satyar Shah, Canuck Central co-host with me. And obviously, your main post-game host here on the Canuck Central Kintec Footwear and Orthotics post-game show, keeping you active and on your feet for life. Probably the most mind-boggling moment of the game was Philip Forsberg at the, like, you know, right on the blue paint, essentially, all alone in front, and he passed it backwards to end the offensive opportunity.
It was essentially that Jason Dickinson passed to Bo Horvat, but instead of Jason Dickinson passing it, it was Philip Forsberg, yes. A guy who can score 30, 35 goals. You know, when Jason Dickinson did it, I said, okay, that's the right play. You're passing to a better player. It's an open net. This is Philip Forsberg. Just take the shot, man. It's you're going to be all right.
Yeah. Like, I'll take the Philip Forsberg shot any day of the week because that guy is a pretty good player. Coming up, we'll close out the post-game show. Ian McIntyre will join us. Maybe get a couple of your texts and phone calls in as well. It's Dan Riccio and Vic Nazar, Kintec Footwear and Orthotics, Canucks Central post-game show on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Schmott left point, taking a pass from Lamico, tips it into the corner, carried behind the net, tried to center, top of the crease, and it's in the net. Juho Lamico knocked it home in the blue paint. As Mott centered from behind the goal, Lamico chops it home. It's his third of the year. And Vancouver takes a 3-1 lead with 7:41 left in the third.
This is actually great work by Lamico and Mott. And they go down in the zone and they get a shift out of the fourth line, which they desperately need. And then they end up getting a goal out of it, which is Tyler Mott going behind the net. He does the old pass it back the other way from which you're going in front of the net. And then Lamico just takes a 9-iron and hacks at it, and it ends up going off Saros and through his blocker armpit. And wow, Canucks are up 3-1.
That is Corey Hirsch's extended description of the Juho Lamico goal that gave the Canucks a 3-1 lead. It's the Canucks Central post-game show presented by Kintec Footwear and Orthotics. Do your feet hurt? Kintec can help. Talk to a fitting expert today at 11 Lower Mainland locations or online at kintec.net, kintec.net. Bruce Boudreau's not forgetting Juho Lamico's name anymore, I guess.
I was going to say, he scores so infrequently, so you do have to spend some time really describing it because it's such a rare occasion. You should break out the 9-iron and underneath the blocker gap right there. It was great, great call from Hershey.
Okay, wait. You like? Does Juho Lamico already have more goals as a Canuck than Jay Beagle had over his Canuck career?
Off the top of my head, no. But the fact that I can't remember how many goals Jay Beagle, because I think Jay Beagle scored 4 or 5 for Vancouver.
Okay. Hockey Reference is going to make the decision on this one.
Six total goals
as a Canuck.
Oh, right. Yeah, he scored one last year. That's what it was. Yeah.
7 if you include playoffs, as Fast Eddie lets us know.
Yep. There you go.
So he's halfway there to replicating the production of Jay Beagle. But the penalty kill prowess is definitely not there. And that's what the Canucks miss most, don't they?
Face-offs and all that sort of stuff. Although in the face-off tonight, he was 10 for 10. And, you know, we were keeping an eye on this, obviously, because Horvat's not in the lineup. JT Miller took 11, or sorry, won 11, lost 12. Dickinson was 3 for 2. Pettersson was 3 of 8. And Lamico, again, broke 50%, 10 and 10.
And he was really good the other day against Washington. So steps in the right direction. They're going to need a lot of it. Bo Horvat's not going to be in the lineup for a little while. You know, there's a lot that comes out of this game. The Canucks get 4 points. You look at the out-of-town scoreboard. Calgary beats Florida tonight. So you know it's going to be a trek. As we talk about all the time, you know, they've got to play well over 600 in their points percentage to make that sort of a playoff push. They've got to be about as good as they've been through the first 13 Boudreaux games for the rest of the season. Maybe a little bit less than that, but you know they don't have a ton of room for error here. But you know the thing that has this team going right now, they're playing solid defense, their goalie makes big stops, but probably the biggest thing out of these last two games, Bick, it always comes back to Elias Pettersson, but Pettersson looking more like the guy we expect at any other point this season. Right now, he's looking like that guy again that can really carry this team to some victories.
And again, it shouldn't be entirely surprising. I'd still like to see a longer runway of successful performances. You know, they don't always be anything as dominating as tonight, but you know. Let's see this trend continue for 5, 7, 10 games, and then we can collectively declare as a fan base and media community, yeah, he's back. He's back.
I know people are like, you know, seeing the game tonight and being like, well, they need to really commit to Podkolzin, Pettersson, and Hoglander for a long period, and you know, out of necessity, I don't see much changing with the forward group. Unless there's some absences from the lineup, but you know, they do have options when everybody is healthy, and I would like, you know, Pettersson at his peak to be playing with guys that can finish at a better clip than what we've seen out of Podkolzin and even Hoglander at this point.
Yeah, man, it is so interesting because of the guys out of the lineup, right? All these conversations become so difficult to entertain.
Like what else do you have? Yeah.
Yeah, but when the guys come back is really what I'm talking about here. Because when Garland and Horvat come back, that changes the machinations of everything. And how do you kind of start to explore the idea of what a full lineup looks like with a rejuvenated, we hope, Elias Pettersson? Because even though it's working right now, yeah, do you want to break that up and all that sort of stuff? It's going to be some interesting thoughts some interesting decisions for Bruce Boudreaux to make.
So the Canucks defense, we look at it and, you know, we had some jokes about Tucker Poolman playing on the power play tonight. Quinn Hughes continues to be phenomenal this season at both ends of the ice. He's added he's not as easy to bully off the puck. He can body guys as well as take the angles away, and we know how good his skating can be to help him recover in big moments. But it's almost he's been so good for such a long period of time that we just don't really marvel at how much of a driver he is for this team.
Sorry, who was that for?
Quinn Hughes.
Yeah, I know. Quinn Hughes was just in a night like tonight. It's a subtle thing that I don't know if he was the most spectacular person on the ice. Let's not say he was poor, but you see how much he can control the game. And tonight was a rare night when an opposing D-man also does it the same. So Roman Josi held the puck 1 second longer than Quinn Hughes, but the two of them are so far ahead of the rest of the pack here. Yeah. And you see that, like, that style of D-man, how they can dictate the tempo of the game from the back end. Push the tempo, get involved. Roman Josi had a chance early on in the game where he's high up in the play. And it's that element of that D-man that you kind of want all across your lineup. And the Canucks don't have, not to Quinn Hughes' level, but, OEL can make some passes, but we don't see necessarily him push high up the ice. Tyler Myers can do it, but it comes with the caveat of, is he responsible enough in his own end? And that's why we're looking at that bottom pairing. It's like, oh, man, Jack Rathbone, when he's up to his paces after a spell here in the AHL, could they really use that level of talent in that bottom pairing? And I think it would help a great deal if he could jump in there,
especially with the emergence of Luke Schenn. You think having Rathbone and Schenn maybe as your third pair would look a lot better, so you have more options there, but they really are missing that third pair left D. And we know Boudreau would like another puck moving guy there, so maybe Rathbone does fit as what the coach would like to have there, as well as, anything else. But we both marveled at Oliver Ekman-Larsson. And everybody will remember Nils Höglander getting a half chance on a breakaway. It didn't really amount to anything. But I hope people go back and look at how that play happened, because the pass Oliver Ekman-Larsson makes is absolutely insane. It feels like it defies physics at times.
I had to go back and watch it three times to really see the angle in which it took, because he's getting pressured by two guys who are one's coming from his side and one coming from the front, and he splits the pass between them. And not only that, there's a Canucks player in the lane, and there's also a Predators player in the neutral zone, and it splits both of them, and then it ends up on Nils Höglander's stick, like, on a dime. It's not, just hopelessly fired. It's perfectly weighted. Höglander takes it in stride, can receive the pass easily. And Hoaglander's got a guy on him draped as well. And he tries pushing past him, can't accelerate past him. Good defense. But it was and O'Neill's body positioning on that was unbelievable. Just a flick of the wrist and perfectly through everything. It just floored me. What a great pass that was. And it just gets unrecognized because, there's no scoring chance really out of there. But that's a moment when you just kind of relieve the pressure in a difficult circumstance where it would have been easy to turn it over there. And suddenly you're in a very, very difficult spot. But, hey, that's one of the things that we notice from OEL this year. Rather than, a lesser demon that does the off the boards, off the glass and out and just kind of reset in the neutral zone, hey, how do I try to create something out of this? And he almost did.
I have a hard time being critical of OEL's production. Like, of course, it has to be better, Bick, for a guy that's making $7+ million. Mm-hmm. But it's hard to be so critical of it when the team has had such a hard time finishing as a whole this year, right? Like, you'd think he'd get a lot of those assists that normally come from, Pettersson scoring at a clip that's more reminiscent of what we've seen earlier in his career, or Brock Besser. But, part of that goes into the lack of health that the Canucks have had through their top forward group and some of those absences through the course of the season. We'll table that. We'll bring it up with Ian McIntyre, who joins us on the Canucks Central post-game show, brought to you by Kintec Footwear and Orthotics, keeping you active and on your feet for life. I'm Matt Carey's the final bits of the post-game show. He is our quadruple threat. You see him on television. You read his work at sportsnet.ca. You even see him on Hockey Night in Canada, and of course you hear him on radio as well. The quadruple threat, Ian McIntyre. Hi, Mac. What's happening?
I like to think of myself as the closer. I come in to close out the game.
You're the Eric Gagne in this situation?
Well, I would date myself with most of my baseball references, but that one's fine. That one's fine.
So you're more of a Raleigh Fingers guy then?
No, I'm not that old. I was thinking of like John Wetland or someone from the Expos. You guys don't know John Wetland either. Anyways, never mind. But you know what I would love? You know what I would love, honestly? Like if I was a closer, I would insist that not only does a golf cart come out to the bullpen to pick me up, but it's got to be baseball themed. Like it's got to be a big batting helmet or,
yeah,
you know, I don't know, bats along the side of the vehicle as like side rails. Put my feet up on the dash as they're driving me in. Probably have that music blaring too.
I was just gonna say, would that be your walkout song? And I didn't realize until now, but Dan Riccio, I don't know if Dan ever worked FM radio, trampling all over the intro there when Hendrick stepped in there. Man, you gotta hit that post there, Dan. Come on.
Here we go.
I know. Normally, there's a little bit of a break where he says there's got to be somewhere out of here, and then I say something, and then there's more. But anyways, that's okay. That's fine. I'm here to close.
I haven't blown
a save yet.
I'm in from the bullpen to fill in for Sat here while he's out there in Toronto doing the big TV thing, and I'm getting chirped for not hitting the post on All Along the Watchtower. Unbelievable.
Yeah, Sat's got a good gig. I hear he's not back in time for the show tomorrow. Somehow, even with the 3-hour time change.
we'll figure it out as it happens.
He's a vet. But you guys get the pleasure. Well, I was going to say you get the pleasure of my radio company because Sat's there. But of course, even when I'm there, I'm still doing the show. So I guess it just works for some people. You know what else I do? I get out of the cart at home, and as the music's playing, I'd walk really slowly out to the mound.
Slow motion.
I'd probably like open 5 sticks of gum, shove them all in my mouth. Eventually, I'd get around to picking up the ball. Then I'd throw my 68-mile-an-hour heater in to take in yard. But
68? I'd be pretty impressed if you could clock in at 68. But we'll leave
once upon a time. I made the mistake once. At the PNE, they had a way to take some money off you by having a radar gun. You get to throw 3 pitches, and I thought, well, let's see how I do. And like with a big crowd watching, I nearly, you know, pulled my shoulder out of its socket and threw I think it was a 68-mile-an-hour heater. I thought I'd get into the 70s or, you know. Maybe, I don't know. It doesn't look that hard on TV.
Yeah.
That is a humbling experience when you do that, because I've done that too. And I've checked out of my memory what I think I hit. I think it was 57. And that was a humbling experience.
Oh, I know. And you throw it, and you hear the thud, because it hits a pad.
Yeah.
And you're expecting, somehow, you know, because it's baseball, and you're giving it your all, and there's a big crowd, you're expecting a cheer or something. It's just thud and then silence as everyone looks glumly at the speed rating.
It's all in the mechanics, but
and then you got to throw 2 more.
Yeah,
because you're not just going to say, no, I think I'm good. Of course, you're going to throw 2 more, and you're going to throw them slower.
Yeah,
because now your shoulder's injured.
It's like everybody that's chirped somebody for throwing out the first pitch and having an ugly first pitch or not even being able to get it over home plate from the mound. And then, don't do that without actually having to do it yourself. Just a word of advice. All right.
How's the show going so far?
Pretty good, iMac.
Are we done? Are we done? Can I go?
No, not yet. But you asked Bruce Boudreau, you know, what his takeaway was from this 5-game road trip. And, you know, he talked about the goaltending and the heart and the want of his team. So maybe some intangibles. What would your takeaway be from this 5-game roadie that the Canucks just
finished? I loved his answer. Some guys have hearts of lions. I love that.
Yeah.
especially, you know, being Scottish, Lions are very close to us in our culture.
Which is great. And
okay. I thought you'd have something to say about that. But anyways,
I was going to do something, but we already did the baseball talk.
So. Okay. It was, you know, his answer was very good, and his takeaways, you know, that, he has a good goalie. So I think that's good to acknowledge, and he does. And Demko, you know, was really impressive. When you think about him playing all five and the last at the end of the road trip, it's the third in four and the fourth in six. And, you know, he wins the last two. So Demko was outstanding. I liked, though, what he said, and I think it's important. And it sounds, you know, what coach is going to say, well, my guys don't really care. Like, no one's ever, well, probably, maybe he would say that if he thought they didn't care. But I thought it was important, you know, because we're still early days here of this regime. I think it's important that he thinks and believes that these guys' give a crap meter is really high. Like, nobody wants to just sort of accept losing and accept that they're not going to be a playoff team. And again, that sounds like, well, why does anyone even need to say otherwise? Like, of course you do. But saying you want to play your way out of a hole and working and showing the urgency to start to get yourself out of that hole are two different things. So I thought that was, you know, really important for them. I think it was just important for their psyche, you know, as well. I liked what Demko said as well, that, you know, in previous years you'd lose a couple and then a third and then a fourth. And that's how this trip felt. Like, I'd said at the start that it could be an 0-5 trip. And that's not because I thought the Canucks were going to be terrible, but that's how good the opponents were. That's how difficult the schedule was. And on top of that, you had the circumstances of the layoff and the conga line to the COVID protocol room. And this was really tough. And when it got to 0-3, I thought I would have said there's more of a chance that they go 0-5 than 2-3. And, you know, the over-under would have been 1. You'd think, okay, some way they're going to win one of these last two, especially since as their trip went on, they're on the road so long that they gave teams time to cool off. And by the time they got to Washington had, I think they'd lost 4 and then they won 1, but Washington wasn't as sharp as they had been, you know, a couple of weeks ago. Same thing with Nashville, who had been one of the best teams in the NHL for a couple of months, but they've suddenly cooled. But to come back and win these last two after losing the first three, that just feels, you know, profoundly significant when you're trying to show that you're not last year's team.
He was kind of challenged this morning. Nils Höglander was. Your thoughts on his game? Because I thought it was really, really strong. You know, paired well with Elias Pettersson, who was obviously going. But if you wanted to see a response from a player, you certainly got it.
Yeah, I don't know that he was really challenged, because honestly, and I mean this, Höglander may have no idea what Boudreaux actually said. Boudreaux told us in a Zoom call that he thought Höglander needed to learn to play defensively as well. But Höglander was good. I'd never fault Höglander for effort, though. Like, he's always a guy who's industrious and seems to be, you know, doing his best. And that's what made him stand out last year, honestly, as much as anything, was just how hard he worked game in and game out. So it doesn't surprise me that he would continue to work hard. But I think Boudreaux was right that when that line had a little taste of success, it just elevated Höglander and Pod Colson to a higher level. Pod Colson's a guy who's not getting, I think, any attention tonight because of the storylines and the narratives around some others. But Pod Colson's another guy who had basically played his way to the bottom of the lineup, and the next stop was out of the lineup. And he had a really good game tonight and was confident and direct with the puck. So I thought those guys were good, and they needed to be good with both Garland and Horvat out. you know, we've talked so often about this team and its top nine forwards and, you know, how good are those top nine? Is it good enough to carry the team? Well, now you're struggling just to have two lines. And they got a lot out of that line tonight. They were very good. And Höglander was good as well. Needs to do it, obviously, for more than one game. They all do. And Petey's been good now for a few games. He needs to just keep doing it for a while, like until the end of the season would be nice. But he needs to get on a run and make up for some of the lost ground.
Yeah, and he was really good through the middle. I think what was as indicative of anything tonight with Pettersson's game, like he was central of the success of Podkolzin and Höglander. A lot of the chances they created were off plays Pettersson started. He made the players around him better. Of course, he finishes, you know, that first goal, but it's just as good as we've seen Pettersson at any time this year. And it's building off of what was really good. I thought Thursday in Tampa, hit the post on Saturday, was one of their best players against Carolina. Obviously did what he did on Sunday and then carries that tonight to probably his best performance for me.
Yeah, and important for him, even though, as he said, he knows what he's capable of, but to validate the two-goal game in Washington by having a game like this tonight, by, as Boudreau said, making sure it's not a one-off, and he certainly made sure it wasn't a one-off. And this is the thing about Pettersson on a night like tonight. He's so good when he's on his game that he can drive a line no matter who he's playing with. You know, because he's that good and he makes the players around him better. There's not a lot of players like that. And even on this team, there's not a whole ton of guys who can just drive a line. Like, he's one. Miller is one. Bo Horvat is one, because Horvat's basically had to do it almost since he's been a Canuck, is drive his own line. So when Pettersson has a game like tonight, it just it's so encouraging. Because he's more impactful than almost anybody on the team. You know, he's right up there with, well, no one's as impactful right now as Thatcher Demko, but he's right up there with the influence of Quinn Hughes and certainly JT Miller when he's on his game like he was tonight.
Ian, how much stock do we put in kind of the schedule here right now? So it's 39 points in 39 games, but they've played seven less games at home.
Yeah.
How much would you factor that into the evaluation of this team here through 39?
A little, but not a whole lot. Because, the games, you still have to win those home games. And, yeah, it's easier, a little easier at home than on the road, but not a whole lot. It's kind of like opponents as well. Like when you look at, a soft schedule, maybe not so much the hard one, because this was legitimately, like, you know, they played one of their best games this year in Tampa, and they still lost to the two-time Stanley Cup champions. There's some schedules where they're so hard that, you know, the reality is you can play your best and not win. But oftentimes when the schedule gets lighter, and I think this would be the danger for the Canucks, falling into this mindset. If you, having been through this tour, and we know the games they have coming up, Florida, St. Louis. I mean, these are formidable opponents still, so they won't be taking anything lightly. But if they get into a stretch, say in February, when they make up a lot of these games, they got a lot of games at home, and maybe they've got a lot of games you look on paper and say, well, that's not nearly as hard as what they just did in the middle of January. But you still have to go out and play them. You still have to go and win them and be on your game. You know, they're certainly not a team that's going to beat anybody just by coasting along or being complacent. They need the same sort of desperation, almost fear, that they had at the end of this trip to not let it get away. They need to apply that to all these games. So, yeah, the schedule should be a little more in their favor. We'll see, though. I mean, those home games may not all come in a cluster. They may be sprinkled and broken up. So there still may be travel involved, but it's all about the team now just maintaining this edge, both the in terms of how it's playing, but also that hunger and that urgency and that intensity and that little bit of fear of failure to keep going now. But yeah, you know, it's better to have more home games than road games. I'll put it like that, but it still is about executing and playing with urgency.
To close out the segment, man, this segment is like the Canucks road trip. Brutal start, but somehow coming together toward the end.
I like that. Who was that? You got to give credit.
Unsigned texter. I wish they signed it. But it's, you know what happened?
You wrote that yourself, didn't you?
No, I didn't.
That was you, Rachel. You just made that up.
You came out of the pen. You walked the first two batters. Everybody's freaking out. But then you struck out the side to close it. So that's how it worked out.
Yeah, well, nobody got home. All I got to do is get one out. If it takes me four batters because the bases are empty, so be it.
Yeah. I'm Mac. You're the best. We'll talk. Thank
you. I'll take 16 or 20 million a year.
Sounds about right by baseball standards.
Yeah.
Thanks, iMac.
Sorry, I hope I didn't wreck the show. It's been a long road trip.
It's been a good one. Thanks for this.
Yeah. See ya.
There is... I don't know, the quintuple threat now because he's the ultimate closer. So
he's just the closer, man. He's just the closer.
We're just adding more expertise to Ian McIntyre. Bick Nizar and Randeep Janda, they've got the People's Show tomorrow. We're back to a regular schedule on Sportsnet 650. You can get it on Apple Podcasts and, of course, on Spotify. I'll be back with Canuck Central in the afternoon, starting up at 4 o'clock Pacific time. The Canucks get a 3-1 win in Nashville. Bick, this has been a lot of fun, man.
Yes, and shout out to Riley in North Van who texted in to say it was my text that you read there.
Riley, we read the good texts, especially the ones that chirp us and are good to read on air. It is Dan Riccio and Bick Nizar. Shouts to Josh Elliott Wolf and Fast Eddie Gregory for putting this fine program together. And we'll see you tomorrow on Sportsnet 650. This has been the Kintec Footwear and Orthotics Canucks postgame show, keeping you active and on your feet for life on the Sportsnet Radio Network.